The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a Don't Ask How the Sausage is Made edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Links, patties, crumbled, brats, kielbasa. I'm not mad at sausages. On a pizza, with eggs, in an omelet, smoked on a barbecue plate, or with mustard on a hot dog bun. It doesn't matter. It's all good. Hey, and the same thing goes with a 42-16 final margin, right? I mean, right? 26-point differential, 4-possession margins. Good for all occasions. Never disappointing. Right? Well, sure. But you may not want to see every step of the manufacturing process. Sometimes it goes down easier the less you know. Kind of like, you know, the bizarro learning rainbow. And so it was Saturday at the newly christened Saban Field. A 1-point margin game well into the fourth quarter. A 5-point margin until under 6 minutes remaining in the game. A 1-possession game until the 2:30 mark in the game. 13 penalties, erasing 2 touchdowns, 3 turnovers, 1 on the 2-yard line, yep, another snap issue, 3 sacks, 50% passing, and 38% third down conversions. A bloody mess, to invoke the sausage metaphor at least one more time. But thanks to a 28-point fourth quarter, a 21-point final 6 minutes, the plumped final margin is preserved. Okay, that was the last time. Lipstick on a pig, I can't stop now. Or a good barn that needs painting. I don't know. Are we evaluating the team or our watching experience? Ouch, that one hits a little close to home. Would we evaluate differently if the 28-3 margin occurred in the first quarter rather than the fourth quarter? All else being equal. I know personally my view and pleasure would have been higher, and the mother 2 houses down would have been able to let her kids play outside for a little bit longer. For the team, well, what would we want for the team? A team that gets a big lead and sort of mails it in the second half? Or a team that fights through a close game, adversity, grit, reveals heart, and ends up prevailing significantly so in the end? It's an interesting question. Let's jump in, break down the game like we do, position by position. And again, as we do, let's start at the quarterback position, Jalen Milroe. The easiest way to describe Jalen's performance on Saturday was productive, but not efficient. 194 passing yards, 2 touchdowns. Again, passing 16 for 26 passing, not efficient, two rushing touchdowns, so four on the day, two rushing yards on 12 carries. That's atrocious, and it really speaks to the yardage loss on sacks. Jalen Milroe represents where he is in his development and where he is in the season right now, represents as wide an option of outcome that you could expect really from a quarterback, that you would ever really expect from a quarterback, discounting injury, taking that out of the equation. At his best, Jalen Milroe can win the Heisman. At his worst, he's benched. That's a pretty dang wide selection of outcomes. And any of that could be in his future. I'm not rooting, obviously I'm going to root for the Heisman versus the other, but at his current development, he can go either of those routes. At his current development, at his current place as a player, he really is, it's really an oil and water relationship with pressure from the defense. He is incredibly athletic, but at times he lets his athleticism work against him. And that really leads to some of these big sacks. I think there was an 18 or 19 yard sack. He sort of rolled back and then rolled over and then just stopped and let the defenders get on him. He didn't try to run away. It's as if I move a little bit, they'll stop coming. Was almost the impression I got watching the game. And of course he rolls back further and then ends up getting tackled for a significant loss. He needs Jalen Milroe needs the offensive line to step up. Now we're going to talk about the offensive line and the woes that they had, but Jalen Milroe plays only to the level of his offensive line. Now we can reason that that's true of all quarterbacks, but it's not true of all quarterbacks. Some quarterbacks elevate the play of the team, including the offensive line. Jalen plays to the level of the offensive line. When the offensive line struggles, Jalen's going to struggle. Look at Texas last year. Look at Michigan last year. There's a little bit of a trend pattern, and we saw it Saturday against South Florida. We need the offensive line. We, Alabama fans, we need the offensive line to improve. We need Jalen to continue his improvement trajectory as well. I'm not betting against it. I'm just saying these are the things that we need to see, and there's always a symbiotic relationship between offensive performance and the play of the offensive line. Sometimes the sort of the percent of relation can vary, and it's disproportional in this situation that we're seeing with this Alabama squad. So the offensive line needs to come together, and then all of a sudden Jalen will be a better quarterback, and we're all rooting and looking forward to that happening. Let's talk about the running back position. It is what we thought it would be. So there's not a whole lot of words here, but we're going to call out some star players. Jamarion Miller and Justice Haynes, we know that they're the stars. Interestingly enough, they scored on back-to-back plays for Alabama. Jam Miller scored a touchdown, and then on the very next possession on the first place from play from scrimmage, Justice Haynes scored. So that's sort of a unique thing within like a minute and a half of a game for running backs to score on consecutive plays. That's offensive plays for Alabama. That's a unique sort of stat line. Jam Miller was 15 carries for 140 yards, one touchdown, had a long of 56. What a glorious run that was. Sort of the shift that he made, the cut inside, just kind of left the defender reeling. And then Justice Haynes, 13 for 46. So his production per carry was less than, though he did have one touchdown and 29 yards. So 29 of his 46 yards came on a singular play. The remaining yards, 17 yards, the remaining 17 yards, my math is wrong. Yeah, 17 yards came on 13 carries. And so Justice was bottled up pretty well, but Jam was able to get free and have a very productive day. He averaged almost 10, and of course, the 56-yarder. Jeremy Bernard, wide receiver, had an end around for 13 yards. That was early in the game, and I like sort of the misdirection on that. Obviously, he had success there. Would have been interesting to see Alabama go back to that. I think there would have been some benefit there. There was also a toss sweep. I like seeing the action to the outside in the running game, and I think Alabama could have maybe done some more of that. I think we're going to see, again, the running game continue to blossom as the offensive line plays better and better. And again, we're going to talk about that a little bit. Let's spend a minute with the wide receivers. And really, we need to call this group the pass catchers. There were 9 pass catchers on the day. 4 were tight ends. 1 was a running back. So 5 of the 9 were non-wide receivers. And then there were 4 wide receivers who had catches. Ryan Williams continues to sort of demonstrate himself as the star. Wow, he looked really impressive. 4 catches, 68 yards, a touchdown. And his long was 43 yards, which made it a 12-point game. It was a beautifully athletic play. He caught the ball and then transitioned it to his left hand and immediately went out and stiff-armed one of the tacklers. That's a very dynamic, that's a very innate ability that he had to transition the ball and go for the stiff arm. He didn't just cradle the ball and go down. Hey, it's still a big play, and then this line up and run another play. No, he had a head for the end zone. And so I'm going to protect the ball. I'm going to shield off the defender, and I'm going to try to gain some extra yards here. And he's fast enough. As soon as he was able to get a little bit of separation with the hand on the helmet of the would-be tackler, his legs kicked in, and he was gone for 6. Very instinctive player. He's going to be fun to watch and is already contributing mightily for the Tide. 3 touchdowns in 2 games and 6 catches on the season. He is a good one, and he's going to be a blast to watch as we continue forward. Kobe Prentice had a good day, 2 catches for 34 yards, 1 being a touchdown, 18 yards. That was a big reception. It made it an 8-point game. And so you get to the upper edge of a 1-possession game. That was a big one. And then Jeremy Bernard was active. He had 4 catches for 53 yards. With his long was 22. Jeremy is just a very physical player and certainly a joy to watch as well. He's going to have his share of big plays, and I like the utilization here with a handful of catches and as well as the end around as well. Limited use of the middle of the field. I'm talking about this under wide receiver, though we could talk about it under Milroe, and I'm putting it under wide receiver because I'm sort of planting my flag that this is an offensive, I'm going to call it, it's not an issue. It's an offensive topic, more so, I think, than it is a quarterback topic. Now, use of the middle of the field, it's reasonable to reasonable minds can agree or at least discuss that that's not the hallmark of a Milroe passing attack. And I agree. He stretches the field. He takes the ball downfield. But he can throw over the middle of the field. Alabama's just not utilizing the middle of the field. And so, again, we can reasonably have conversations. Is this an offensive play selection issue or is this a Milroe issue? And it's sort of which is the chicken and the egg there, right? If he can't run it, we're not going to call it. And so, well, then is that play calling? Well, no, that would be quarterback. He can run it. It's not his best, but he can run it, and we're not calling it. Well, then that's an offensive thing. And so which is the chicken and which is the egg on this one? I am partly out of hopefulness and partly because we have evidence in other areas. I'm going to say right now that it's an offensive play selection topic. And again, as much as I want that to be true, we also see other factors that are staples, that are hallmarks of a DeBoer offense that we're not, that the Alabama team is not yet utilizing. And that's motion. That's pre-snap motion. I suspect that we'll continue to see more and more pre-snap motion. And with that, there'll be plays over the middle of the field, sort of the short middle of the field. I think Alabama has selected to play a little bit of a vanilla and a little bit of bring along the team offense. And that's just where the team is right now. I suspect as we get into stiffer play, maybe as early as this Saturday, we're going to see increased use of motion as well as increased use of the middle of the field. We may not go full on, full flavor offense against Wisconsin, but my guess is we'll open it up a little bit. We'll show a little bit more uniqueness in the play call, have a bye, have a week off, and then it's Georgia. And we're going to throw the kitchen sink at Georgia, I suspect. So that'll be an interesting sort of development to play. It could point out another sort of distinction. This will be a fun thing to sort of call out as the season goes on. I think I've got 2 or 3 that we're going to mention even today. The differences that we notice between DeBoer and Saban. And Saban used to would say, we're not going to hold anything back. We're going to show everything because it's about what we do, not what the opponent does. And that's fair to a point. I think there's also reasonability to hold back and not share. And I think DeBoer probably is more of that mindset. And so my guess is we're going to hold things back. We're not seeing a lot of motions. We're not seeing a lot of the usage of the middle of the field. We're going to start to see those things as we get into tougher competition. Again, if not Saturday against Wisconsin, then 2 weeks from Saturday against Georgia, again, kitchen sink situation. All right, we've put it off for as long as we can. Let's talk about the offensive line. And I want to be crisp on this because it's easy to rabbit trail off into sort of a lot of sideline discussions. Mm-hmm. And so if we look at the offense of the starting unit from Saturday, there was one player that was not in the game. And so that caused one player to move one position to another. And then there was a player that came in off the bench to backfill for the transition player. So let's talk through starters from week one would have been Caden Proctor, and then Caden missed at left tackle. And so Elijah Pritchard came in. Elijah Pritchard himself became dinged. He played the rest of the game, at least while the starters were in. And then we started rotating backups. It was a 63-0 margin. So we started rotating backups at some point relatively early in that game. Out for Saturday against South Florida were both Caden Proctor and Elijah Pritchard.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
And so you start looking for your third option at the left tackle position. So that's the key point. It's the third option at the left tackle position. Now let's talk about how the line sort of lined up left to right. Left tackle was Tyler Booker, who's normally our left guard. And so he slid out from guard to tackle. So left tackle, Tyler Buller, Booker. Left guard was Gino Vandermark. So he came in from the bench. He's the Michigan State transfer. And in the center and the right side of the line were consistent with the prior week. Center Parker Brailsford, left right guard Jaden Roberts, and right tackle Wilkin Formby. So let's talk about some of the players here. Tyler Booker played a relatively good game, considering that he had not played left tackle certainly since maybe his freshman year. Practiced at it a little bit, but not a whole lot, and certainly not practicing with Gino Vandermark. They caught just a couple of days of practice leading up to South Florida at a point in time where the team was still determining who would be the starter. They did get some reps. Tyler Booker played better as the game went on. I think he had a couple early penalties. Again, just trying to do too much at the position. Gino Vandermark also had a couple early penalties, but generally acquitted himself well at the left guard position. Parker Brailsford was steady at center. Jaden Roberts was steady at the right guard position. Wilkin Formby struggled at the right tackle position. Now he had at least two penalties, probably closer to four. And just generally struggled on the day. Now, Wilkin he's a Tuscaloosa native. Wilkin was one of the better performers across the offensive front against Western Kentucky. And so you can say, well, maybe the increased talent level really exposed Wilkin. That's fair. And if that's a true statement, then he's really going to struggle at a starting position as we get into tougher and tougher opponents. And so if you subscribe to that line of thought, you can also say, hey, let's break this down a little bit and let's talk about who he was going against. He was going against Wilkin. That was a true sophomore. He was going against a fifth-year senior who happens to be from Birmingham. And so you can imagine that player, a grown-ass man compared to Wilkin, a grown-ass man with a little chip on his shoulder coming into Tuscaloosa to play really just the college right down the road from where he grew up. And so that, I think, is not 100% the reason that Formby struggled, but it's not a 0% reason either. There's an interesting sort of thought process, and this came up in some of my readings leading up to the South Florida game. One of the players, not the player, but one of the players that gave Alabama fits last year, and the name escapes me, he had two sacks last year when Alabama played in Tampa. And he, too, was a fourth or fifth year senior, and he had two sacks against Alabama. By all metrics, he had a phenomenal day. If you look at the rest of his 30 starts that he had at South Florida, the rest of the games that he played in, he had one sack in all of the other 30 games. He had two against Alabama. So he was definitely coached up, saw an opportunity, left it all on the field, all of the colloquialisms ring true. And we could have seen potentially another version of that with Formby. Again, I'm not saying that's 100% the reason, but I'm going to give it more than the 0%. Formby was replaced very late in the game. He was replaced by Elijah Pritchett. Now, Pritchett was being held out for injury, but at a late stage in the game, Pritchett came in, and he played for three drives, six plays, and all three of those drives netted in touchdowns. A net of 164 yards were gained in runs to the right. It was 164 net yards. Two of the three touchdowns were runs to the right, so effectively behind Pritchett, or what would have been Formby. And one was a pass. It was the Ryan Williams play. One was a pass to the left, which is throwing to the left, the quarterback's going to not pay attention to the right. And so you're trusting that the right's going to hold up. And then when you run to the right, of course, you're trusting that the right is going to hold up. And so it's an interesting sort of dichotomy. Was that solely the result of Elijah Pritchett coming in, or were there other factors in play? We had a sort of a live chat going with a handful of us from our virtual tailgate club that during the game, and I kept suggesting that the South Florida defenders are whipped. Alabama's about to score a touchdown here. If we can get the ball back, we're going to score. They're whipped. They're having a hard time just getting back on their feet after plays. You can see them just significantly winded. This Alabama offense has a chance to really put some points on late. Again, I didn't say all of these words, but I said enough to confirm that or sort of state the case that South Florida is whipped. Their defense is cooked. And so if Alabama can put together some plays, some physical plays, maybe run the ball, that there can be some success. And that's exactly what we saw. So was it just because Pritchett was in the game, or was it because South Florida was whipped and Alabama would have had some of that success with Formby? I think there's truth on both sides. Clearly the defense was tired. I think Alabama would have had some of that success with Formby, but there's something about a fresh offensive lineman that is aggravated, mad, frustrated, wants into the game, and has a little bit of sort of piss and vinegar in his game at a moment where the defenders are just can't even catch their breath. So I think it's a little bit of both: fresh defender against a tired defense. I think Formby would have performed well, although probably not that well in that situation. There are two statements that, there are multiple statements that DeBoer made in his post-game presser. There were two that were, I found to be significantly compelling, and they seemed to point directly to the offensive line. One statement, and so I want to sort of break these down and spend a minute with him. One statement is he was very definitive, and it wasn't a pound-the-desk sort of way. It wasn't a raise-his-voice kind of way. It wasn't sort of a double speak coach kind of way. It was just very smooth, very matter of fact. DeBoer said the offensive line will be better next week. And it wasn't clenched fist anger, fire in his eyes. It's just a matter of fact. He just said it very matter of factly. The offensive line play will be better. It was a foregone conclusion that that is a true statement in DeBoer's mind. And that can mean one of two things. I take it to mean the more likely interpretation is that we get guys back, that Caden Proctor will play next week, and that Elijah Pritchard will play next week in Madison. That's how I take it to mean. There's also another truth that exists as well. If Alabama rolls out the exact same offensive line that started the game against South Florida, that maybe had 2 days practicing together, that now has a game under their belt, a shit ton of film, and not all positive film, that line will play better next week by virtue of this game. So either of those, I think both of those, I do believe are true statements. I lean in the direction of Proctor and or Pritchard are back ready to play and start. Although I allow room for the worst case scenario, if we tried out this exact same five in this configuration, that that they will play better. So I'm predicting, so if Caden and Elijah Pritchard come back, what does the offensive line look like? Left tackle is Caden Proctor. Left guard is Tyler Booker sliding back to his home spot. Brailsford at center. Jaden Roberts at right guard. And Elijah Pritchard at right tackle. So my guess is that's what we see. I'm just saying I think there's value in this, in the other five. Even if they roll back out there, we shouldn't roll our eyes. We shouldn't be afraid. We should expect good things from them. Another point that DeBoer made is in talking about Elijah Pritchard, he said, we wanted to hold him out. Now I'm paraphrasing here, but there's a key word that that he said. He said, we wanted to hold him out to keep him 100%. The keep, I think, is critical in that statement. He didn't say we wanted to give Elijah another week to get back to 100%. He said we wanted to keep him 100%, which suggests that he was already at 100%, which suggests that Elijah Pritchard was wanting to go into that game earlier and certainly probably even wanted to start, would be my guess. And so the statement that we wanted to keep him at 100% suggests that he could have played, and in fact, he did play late, but the staff wanted to hold him back a little bit, but that he could have played and he could have started. If Saban were the coach, this is one of these interesting things, sort of compare contrast. Saban used to always say, if you can play, you play. And DeBoer said, we wanted to keep him at 100%. By not playing them. And so that's just, again, I don't know that there's a right or wrong way. It's just different ways. And so I thought that was interesting. Elijah Pritchard could have started. Now he could have started and then not be able to play next week. And so I think that's kind of the mindset that that the coaching staff had. But nonetheless, he was held back so that he could maintain his health and not achieve it, but maintain it. And then my guess is in another week, he'll be ready to go. And then with the bye for Georgia, then all the guys will be back for that game. But it'll be interesting to see for Wisconsin. And I think it's nearly a foregone conclusion that Pritchard will be back. But don't stay mad. It will conform me. Don't do it. He's going to get his technique, but he's going back sort of cobbled together. He's going to get his feet under him. There was a reason he won the job over Elijah Pritchard. So my guess is he's going to be back a better player and he will see action at some point in the season and make material positive contributions for the Tide. So don't stay mad at Wilkin for me. We get Proctor back. We get Elijah Pritchard back. And even if we rotate Formby out and we've seen Gino Vandermark play, now we're starting to build some depth across the offensive line. So that's an exciting thing to see. And we'll see that progress. I will say, was it Rock Montgomery came in at the center position when Brailsford lost his helmet on a play? Somebody needs to invest in some snaps and some chin straps. This lock these things on. And so that'd be a fun thing to see. We're going to give a mini game ball on the offensive side of the ball, and we're going to give it to Jaden Roberts. Just, I think he's the only lineman I didn't have anything specific to say about. And he continued his steady, very physical play on Saturday. And so mini game ball out to Jaden Roberts. Hope you enjoy part one of our South Florida review. If so, drop us a 5-star review or reach out to say Roll Tide at the Alabama Football Podcast at gmail.com. In the meantime, eat more sausage.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.